very pleased to be joined by our next guest from The Athletic, currently covering the Colorado Avalanche. It is Ryan S. Clark. Ryan, how are you today, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. We've been talking about the Avalanche for a bit, specifically before the offseason started, seeing all the cap space, seeing how good they are. And personally, I wanted to see them go Golden State Warriors Kevin Durant, LA Dodgers Mookie Betts, and just do something completely reckless but also super fun. And they have been very reasonable and responsible with all the salary cap space. The more recent one is Devin Taves being signed to an extension after the acquisition from the New York Islanders earlier this offseason. Before we get into the bigger scale with the Avalanche, what do you make of the contract and the fit of Devon Taves on the Colorado Avalanche?
Sure. Well, I mean, from an on-ice perspective, you've solidified your top six, which is going to be the question coming into this offseason, because the thought was they were going to move on from Nikita Zadorov. Of course they did. Then it was a matter of, do you let that role go to a prospect like Connor Timmins, Bowen Byram? What do you do? They make the trade for Devon Taves. They get him under contract for 4 years. So, of course, it gives them long-term stability in the sense that, look, Kale McCarr is going to be an RFA after this season, but he's going to sign a new deal. You have Ryan Graves under contract for 3 years, Devon Taves for four, two more years of Eric Johnson. Samuel Girard just starts a 7-year extension worth $5 million annually. Ian Cole's a UFA at the end of next season. So that's five players along with those prospects we've mentioned that are coming into it. But where it really gets interesting with all this is, yes, it's another long-term deal, but it's a long-term deal knowing you only have so many players you can protect ahead of the Seattle Kraken expansion draft.
Yeah, and that blue line, like, there's probably going to be some very good player being exposed to Colorado, or to Seattle, sorry. Is that just a, look, we're trying to win a championship, let's figure this out later, or do you see maybe something bigger from an Avalanche perspective to try to get things a little bit easier to deal with in a Seattle expansion in the next few months here?
I mean, you could argue it's somewhere in the middle just because the Avalanche realize they are now in a window. I mean, you could argue they were last year, but for some, there was this conversation about maybe needing to see more with this many new faces before making a determination. But no, they, if it's not for seven injured players, who's to say where their season ends? But to be serious, like, it's one of those things where they're in a window, and because of that, they are thinking about the future. But part of that means looking at the expansion draft, certain names you know are going to be protected. Nathan MacKinnon, Kale McCarr, Gabriel Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen. But where it gets really interesting is, you know, what happens with some of these players like an Eric Johnson? I mean, do you ask him to waive his no movement clause? And if you do, it allows you to free up one spot. And if that's the case, you take the 7-3-1 format or eight skaters and one goaltender. Who's to say? But at the end of the day, what it comes back to is they are building a team that looks like he can win for a long time. It's just a matter of who do they end up losing when the draft comes.
Yeah, I hadn't, to be perfectly honest, hadn't given the expansion draft aspect of it a lot of thought, but there's a very real chance best player on the Seattle.
That some of us have had to start thinking about Seattle a little bit sooner.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up a little bit later, but yeah, I'm guessing that you've probably done a mock expansion draft or two. But and I would say the best player on that team probably coming from Colorado. That's really fascinating.
You know, it's interesting just to kind of look at what could happen with the Avs, because I mean there's a number of different possibilities. But I mean when you look at just what happened this offseason, and you were talking about the Avalanche being responsible with money, they use that to take care of players like Valeri Nichushkin, Andre Burakovsky, Ryan Graves. Of course, they go out and make the move for Devon Taves, and they get him to a 4-year deal as well. So it's one of those things where, at minimum, you have a guy like Nichushkin and Burakovsky, they're on 2-year deals. At max, you have Taves at 4, Graves at 3. Either way, these are all players that have the potential to be exposed in the expansion draft. If you had to pick one that they're going to protect, it would most likely be Andre Burakovsky, which leaves the other three in an interesting position. Like, Nichushkin has been able to offer them depth and two-way prowess in a middle six role that they haven't always had. Ryan Graves proved to be the perfect defensive partner for Kale McCarr to the point where they had two first full-year professionals as a defensive pairing for a Stanley Cup contender. Whereas with Devon Taves, He's another left-handed puck mover you can bring to this D-line. You look at his metrics, all the underlying numbers show that, like, he's a player that, for what he does and his value, it seems like they were able to pick up someone who can definitely make Jared Bednar say that he has more options to rearrange his top six pairings. And so that's just it. It's like you have all these things, but one of those three, assuming Burakovsky's protected, runs the risk of being tabbed to go to Seattle.
You are well aware one of our colleagues is Pat Steinberg. He just texted me, wants you to confirm Nathan MacKinnon will be protected. Yes, we're okay to report that now?
Big if true, so let's say yes. Sources have indicated Nathan Raymond MacKinnon will be protected. I mean, I love McLovin. I love the fact that in Calgary radio, you guys give a move star like McLovin his own radio show. That's very kind of you. Calgarians are really nice people. But to be serious, I mean, of course, there's going to be those certain names that are protected. But again, it just gets complicated because even when you look at the goaltending situation, this has changed in the last few months because before the conversation was, Jesus, who do you keep, Grubauer or Francouz? Now that free agency's done, if you're an Avalanche fan or someone in that front office, you're looking at Seattle and going, so Braden Holtby's a name, Jake Allen's a name. It's not to say that the Avalanche are out of the woods yet, but it is to say that there are more options out there that Seattle could find enticing beyond Philip Grubauer and Pavel Francouz.
Looking at this Avalanche offseason, like I said, going into it, people saw how good that team was, the potential for that team to be even better, and saw the at least short-term cap space, and everyone started getting some wild ideas of short-term big-money contracts for Taylor Hall, going up, acquire Carey Price, sign Petrangelo, do all of these things. And I do believe that the Avalanche were very responsible about this, but do you think there was maybe a missed opportunity to go for a bit of a home run swing with the cap space that the Avalanche had?
Not when you know the internal logic. And for the front office, their belief is, yes, there's the money they have now, but they know that figure was going to decline once you had to re-sign Burakovsky because he only had 1 year of team control left, so that second year was going to be more expensive. I mean, they had more team control left over with Ryan Graves and Nichushkin, and then, of course, there's the Taves deal. But what they look at is, what does next offseason have in store in the sense of contracts? Because when you sit there and you look at it, Gabriel Landeskog is a UFA, Brandon Saad is a UFA, Matt Calvert, Pierre-Edward Belmar, Ian Cole, Philip Grubauer, those are all UFAs, and those are all players who either play in critical roles or in the least, you know, make some decent money. Like a couple of years ago, $1.8 million, which is what Pierre-Edward Belmar makes, it was considered to be a nominal sum, but now in this flat cap, like, 1.8 has a lot of value, more than people realize, and that's what they're thinking about. But it's also looking at that money and going, you have to get a new deal done for Cale Makar, and let's face it, that's expected to be one that's going to be one of the higher contracts on the team. And so, yes, it's interesting to see how people looked at the short term, but in the grand scheme of things, that's never really been Joe Sakic's MO. Like, him and his staff, they've been about playing a pragmatic game and using a patient approach to make things happen. And even Sakic said it at his golf tournament, like, they are going to do what they can through fringe moves to make this team better. Now, you could argue getting Brandon Saad and Devon Toews are not fringe moves, but what it did is it allowed them to get stronger. It allowed them to move assets, manage their money in a different way, in a sense of cap space is going to one place instead of the other. But above all, it allows them to build what they feel is the most complete team possible without having any sort of financial risk, which if you sign someone like a Petrangelo or Taylor Hall, who's to say, while those players, while good and definitely fill a need, how would those figures impact you 1 to 3 to 5 to 7 years down the road?
A couple more with Ryan S. Clark from The Athletic here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Goaltending ended up being the stumbling block for the Colorado Avalanche in the postseason. Now, to be fair, most teams aren't saying, oh yeah, we're comfortable going three deep at goalie. But are you surprised that the goaltending position wasn't addressed by this group in free agency?
Sakic said at his golf tournament back in September that he really liked their goaltending. It was just a matter of how do players get healthy. And you know, the thought internally is the Avalanche could do a number of things. The first is, do they start looking at what can be done with their own health programs to ensure that more preventative measures are taken to cut down on injuries? The second thing is looking at, you know, what more can individual players do in their own off-season training programs to ensure that they're doing these things to cut down on injuries, because injuries were a theme last year for this team, and it wasn't just the postseason, and it went beyond goaltending. It was like that throughout the entire year. And so if you're the Avalanche, this is one of the priorities that you're facing, because, look, the reality is for every freak accident like Mikko Rantanen, who twists his leg and, well, I guess ankle, foot on a rough patch of ice in St. Louis, for every freak accident like that, you do have others that were a little bit more lingering and repetitive with other players. So it's like, how do you work to combat that? So the thing is if you're Joe Sakic, you saw a goaltending combination that, look, when healthy, it worked. And that's the thing. You look at Grubauer's postseason numbers. They were strong before he got hurt. With Pavel Francouz, you would have wanted to see more, but he was also hurt while he was playing. And that's just it. And here's the other thing that has to be thrown out in all this. Colorado's paying $5.3 million in goaltending. That's half of a Carey Price. Like, that right there is another critical function of how they do business.
Last one for you. As you mentioned, you've spent a bit of time preparing for things for a Seattle expansion draft. Looking at the financial landscape of the league, you don't want to say, oh, wow, thank God for a pandemic. Here comes Seattle. But it does kind of seem like every team could use a little bit more cap space. And while teams have been saying they're not just going to gift Seattle a bunch of things, it does seem like the Kraken could be in a unique situation, having literally all of the salary cap space to maybe get a few extra assets if they're willing to take on a bad contract or two. We are still a ways out, but do you think that Seattle might be in a spot to really take advantage of some of the financial hardships teams are facing in a pandemic?
I mean, it honestly it appears that way because, I mean, the narrative before COVID was simply teams are going to be much smarter about how they deal with the expansion draft, because no one wants to have another Florida or Minnesota story where you look back and go, you could have kept Alex Tuch, you could have had Jonathan Marchessault, you saw Riley Smith rebound, and look at what they've done in Vegas, and you look at the teams that they left, and you're like, maybe they could use those players. So people are trying to avoid that. But with the flat cap, it really changes everything. And so the example that keeps coming up, because it's a fair one, let's take Vladislav Namestnikov. He was someone who was making $4 million a year over the last 2 years. He signs with the Red Wings for $2 million annually. That right there is proof that money is going to be different for the foreseeable future until they can get fans back in stadiums and they can do it safely and consistently and know that they've turned a corner. And because of that, it is possible that a team like Seattle could alter their strategy to say, hey, look, maybe we take on, like you said, some bad contracts, or better yet, maybe they feel they're better off in free agency. Either way, it seems like between the flat cap and between the fact that you have teams like Colorado, like Vegas, like the Islanders, that you stare at them and you say, there are some good players we'd like to have. It seems like it could all work out for Seattle. Now, of course, the million-dollar question is, if it does, are we expecting them to be Vegas part two, where they're in the cup final in year one? And the answer is, no one knows.